Ask the Doctor is brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Every single Saturday at 2 o'clock, it's a free hour of medical advice brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. And today I have joining us again, Dr. Garris here in the studio with me, an interventional cardiologist at St. Vincent's. And today we're going to be talking about issues of the heart, and that is coronary artery disease and the Absorb, which is a new stent that only St. Vincent's offers in the northeast region of Florida. Phone lines are open, and Dr. Garris is here to take your calls, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Doctor, thanks so much for coming in again.
Thank you for having me. It's very exciting to talk about this new stent. So
yeah, it's really cool stuff. So I guess we'll get it started with what exactly coronary artery disease is and why it seems to affect so many people.
So this is kind of a bread and butter show. Coronary artery disease is the main cause of morbidity and mortality and death across the world, especially in the industrialized world. Coronary artery disease basically is plaque formation or atherosclerosis or disease of the arteries that give blood and oxygen to the heart. And as a result, if that's the case, then patients can have all kinds of symptoms. They can have a heart attack, and people can die from it. It's the most common cause of death because of that.
And so there's several options for people, and we'll get into those and what the new Absorb is. What are the risk factors, though, for developing coronary artery disease?
So the accumulation of plaque or atherosclerosis occurs from a very young age. And as soon as we are teenagers, we start accumulating what we call, kind of fatty areas in the arteries, and then plaque forms. And there are many risk factors for that. Some of it we can't control. Some of it we can control. For example, we're all going to age, hopefully, and we can't change that for now. And we inherit some genetics from our family. So these are things we cannot change. There are some things that accelerate the disease process, whether you start from point one or point two. Things that accelerate it include smoking, high untreated cholesterol, high blood pressure, and there are other things that we don't quite know yet. And diabetes is another big one. And hopefully, when we identify those risk factors, we can limit the progression of that disease over time. And we have some very exciting treatments for all these diseases that we didn't have just 5 years ago. So, as an interventional cardiologist, I do spend a lot of time dealing with mechanical therapies of the patients. But there are some really amazing medical therapies and approaches to reduce the risk also.
And so it seems like a lot of coronary artery disease is, to put it bluntly or simply, but it seems like a lot of this is a lifestyle choice.
Lifestyle makes a huge difference, and we do spend a lot of time after we fix patients, whether they have stents or even open heart bypass surgery, discussing what some of the things they can do. And of course, like anything else, some patients are more open-minded about these changes and some are not. And some patients find it very difficult to quit. For example, nicotine is a very addictive drug, and patients, no matter what they do, they've tried their hardest, but they can't quit. So it's best not to start, and so on.
I mean, quitting smoking is one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my entire life. And it's so much easier said than done. And all it takes is slipping up one time, getting too stressed out one time, going out and having a cigarette, and all of a sudden you're a smoker again. It's so easy. And I understand why that can be so frustrating for people. Talking about diet, a lot of this seems like has to do with diet, the amount of red meat you're eating, the amount of fish you're eating, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol. How much does that play into overall heart health?
Everything is altogether part of the whole process. There are some things that are more important than others. Obviously, we'd like everybody to be on a healthy diet, if at all possible. And what is a healthy diet? That varies, and that's a topic in of its own. But certainly, avoiding excess calories would be point number one. Point number two, of course, is watching out, especially if you're diabetic, for carbohydrates and then fats. But keeping an eye on these things is most helpful. So if you see your doctor and you get your blood pressure checked and you get your cholesterol checked and you talk about diabetes and your glucose and your sugars, talk about nicotine. If you're seeing your physician and addressing those risk factors, that is the best way you can reduce the plaque formation, your risk, and live longer, a healthier life for many, many years.
And how much does exercise play into it?
you know, exercise is very important, but it's not a top of that list. I'm not telling people not to exercise, but it's not the top of that list. We know that people that exercise regularly, 4 or 5 times a week, and it doesn't have to be anything extensive. It doesn't have to be severe exercise. You don't have to run marathons or 10, 20 miles. All you have to do is exercise, bring your heart rate up, for 10 to 20 minutes, a day for at least 5 days a week. And that definitely shows some reduction in cardiovascular disease.
Just walking around. Also, Pokemon Go. If you have a hard time, stay motivated to go outside, get out your phone, whip out the Pokemon Go.
If it makes people get off the couch, that's great. Do it.
Right. Just don't walk into the road. You know, that's the only thing. I want to talk about a little bit about the options, and we're going to delve back into really how to maintain that healthy heart. But I want to talk about the options people have. And you have bypass, which you mentioned, and you also have stents that you mentioned. Why do some people go for stents and some people go for the bypass instead?
So the treatment for coronary disease, after it does accumulate, if we failed with the lifestyle changes and our genetics and what we have to deal with in life, you do accumulate plaque, and that plaque will obstruct the arteries. So the coronary arteries are what gives blood and oxygen to the heart. And if those arteries are blocked, it's kind of like having grass that is not being watered. That dies. And that's what a heart attack is. Your heart is not getting adequate supply of oxygen and blood flow to that area. So when those arteries are blocked, this is what we as interventional cardiologists went to training for most of all, is to try to help patients with those blocked arteries. We previously, many years ago, before the 70s, there was no treatment. We just give people some pain medicine and hope for the best. Then we started doing...
Seems efficient.
Yeah. And then we started using angioplasty with the balloon. We go in and open up the artery. And then stents came on the market, which was a huge advance in therapies. Now you have options, bypass surgery or stents, and advanced. Varies per patient based on the severity of disease, the comfort and skill level of the interventional cardiologist that you're seeing. So many interventional cardiologists are not as comfortable treating more complex coronary arteries as others. And of course, what's the patient's preference at that time? But with stents getting better and better, the use of bypass surgery is decreasing, sometimes appropriately so, and sometimes not. So
I'm going out on a limb here. It seems like, by what you were just saying, doctor, that the bypass surgery is the more effective route, but that maybe the more risky route?
Certainly in certain patient populations, bypass surgery is preferred, especially if you have multiple areas of blockage and you're going to need, you know, 5, 6, 7 stents and so forth. But also you look at the risk of the patient. So, yes, you might have a bigger surgery up front and it may give you better long-term outcome. However, with the newer options we have, we would certainly try to avoid having somebody's chest opened if we don't have to and if it's not absolutely the best therapy.
So the stents that I was familiar with, I mean, and you kind of explained this a second ago, but I'll sum it up and correct me if I'm wrong, but basically what happens is the doctors stick a catheter into the arteries and the clogged arteries that are shut.
Yes.
And then they put the stent in there, and then there's this little metal thing. If you're listening right now, you can't really see what I'm doing, but there's this little metal balloon essentially that opens up, and then the stent goes back out and that metal balloon stays. But now you guys have something new called the Absorb.
So the advancement that has occurred after the initial stents, we came out with a medicated stent. So the medicated stents were a massive advancement in interventional cardiology, where you put in a stent and that stent stays open 95% or more of the time versus 70%. That's huge advancement because there's medicine on the metal that prevents narrowing inside that stent. So that was amazing. And that's what we've had since 2001, 2002, and it's still going to probably be the main therapy, is the metal stent with the medicated medicine on it to prevent re-narrowing. In addition, now we have this fantastic advancement that we've been working on for many, many years, and we're happy to be one of the research trials for Abbott in the Absorb trial, is this new stent does the same job as the old stent. It goes in there, it puts in opens up the artery, and has a medicine in it that prevents the artery from re-narrowing. But over a couple of years, that inside that metal, it's not metal anymore. It's made of this material. It's almost like a sugar material that the dissolves within a couple of years. So now, if you're a younger person, especially, or a person you need multiple interventions, that artery becomes back like it's normal. It maintains it can squeeze better, it can function more normally, it responds to other things around it a little bit better. And if you go need to go through it, it's easier. So some massive benefits of having that stent disappear after a couple of years. And it's very exciting advance for us.
So it leaves the patient with more options, it sounds like.
It leaves the patients with multiple more options. And it is hopeful that when the patients don't have any metal in there, they may have some improvement in some other things like their anginal symptoms and so forth. We don't know that for sure yet, but that is the hope.
So you're listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Dr. Garrison, interventional cardiologist at St. Vincent's, joining me here in the studio. The show is all about you. We want to hear from you. If you have a question for Dr. Garrison, go ahead and call in. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Let's go ahead and take it to the phone lines. We have Branson over and Mandarin. Branson, how is your Saturday going, sir?
It's going fantastic, Tim. I'm doing great. I wanted to ask the doctor about the silent killer. I'm doing real good. I've got a little foot problem, but I'm getting well. Yes, tell me about the silent killer. My heart is good, and my parents had good hearts, and I passed my cardiology 4 years ago. I don't smoke or drink, and I live a good life. I walk a lot. What are the symptoms that would show you have heart disease and it doesn't show up on EKGs at surgeries? Thank you, sir.
That's an excellent question, Branson. We face that all the time. And so this is where the patient and the physician have to have a conversation. There are some patients that don't have as much symptoms as others. But you have to assess the risk factors for that patient and what kind of aggressive assessments. So in some patients that I've known, for example, they have had a heart attack in the past that they didn't have much symptoms with, and they just presented with, you know, they're short of breath after they've already had a heart attack or something. Those patients, I would tend to do, for example, a heart catheterization more than I would do a stress test on them. I would tend to do things a little bit differently. So this is a discussion that is personalized for the patient. Your point, however, is very, very well made in that no matter what, the most important thing is treating the risk factors, whether we've had a heart attack or not, whether we know we have a 50, 60, 70% blockage or not, is to make sure we limit those risk factors. And that way we can live a healthier, better life going forward.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Rick.
I appreciate that phone call, Branson. Feel free to call in anytime. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Dr. Garrison, we've been talking about the Absorb. Is a dissolving stent as effective as the normal metal ones that you've been using?
That's a great question. Also, the dissolving stents was compared to the metal stents, and the outcomes appear to be equivalent. So that was part of the trials that the FDA required. So we used that stent versus the standard metal stents with the medication on them, and the result looked very equivalent if the stent is properly deployed. So again, back to that experience of the person getting the stent in correctly, deploying them at the right size. So the physician has to put the stent at the right size of the artery. So if the artery, let's say, is 4 millimeters, you can't put a 2.5 millimeter stent. Then you have to run into big problems. So hopefully if the stent is deployed correctly and with adequate care, then the outcomes are pretty much the same as the metal stents with the medication on them, but you get that added bonus and the added benefit of that disappearing, and your body doesn't have metal in there, and it allows you to do much more things in the future.
Is this going to be the wave of the future when it comes to stents?
So I'd be hesitant to say that everybody should get an absorbed stent. I think there are some patient populations that still would benefit more from a standard metal stent. For example, if we have to put the stent at the beginning of the artery, from a technical standpoint, you don't want the absorbable stent. So these are some technical differences. But I suspect that going forward, if we can show that the absorbable stents work as well and they have the opportunity for us to go back and fix the patients again if they need to, that should be the standard going forward, but not right now.
From a patient's perspective, what if they're considering this, what kind of questions should they ask their doctor?
So one of the most important things with the absorbed stent, when the other hospitals, the other areas start to get it, is you really should consider the experience of your physician. So you want to make sure that the interventional cardiologist that you're seeing is doing adequate volume, because that's, in this situation versus other stents, the proper deployment of that stent makes a huge difference. So you want to make sure you're seeing somebody that has a high volume, has a good reputation, is able to give you a good result. Otherwise, the stent becomes a negative. And after that's the case, then if you do have a good result with the Absorb, you have to make sure you take your medicines appropriately, get into discussion with the doctor, what is the appropriate blood thinners that I need to take for that medicine, and monitor appropriately going forward. But as overall, that's not going to be much different than the other stents that we use at this point.
I had a couple more questions, but we have about 40 minutes left here on Ask the Doctor on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by St. Vincent. So we're going to go ahead and get to those as soon as we get back from this break. Right now it is 2:20. Excuse me. Stay with us. Thank you so much for staying with us here on Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's. Each and every single Saturday, it is a free hour of medical advice brought to you by St. Vincent's. Today on the show, returning to the show, I have Dr. Garris here in the studio with me. He is an interventional cardiologist at St. Vincent's, and we are talking about issues of the heart, coronary artery disease, and the Absorb, which the Absorb is really cool. It is a new stent that only St. Vincent's offers in the northeast region of Florida. We spent a little bit of time talking about that already, Doctor. We're going to spend a little bit more time talking about it coming up. Speaking of issues of the heart, though, what happens if the artery closes all the way?
That's a good question. Our job is to try to prevent that from occurring at any point. But when the artery closes all the way, that is the definition of what happens when you have a heart attack. So that area is not getting enough blood flow or oxygen, and you get heart damage. And immediately, the best treatment to save the person's life and to prevent things from getting worse is to go in as quickly as possible to open up that artery to get restoration of blood flow to the heart. And when that happens, then you salvage the patient's heart. They can, sometimes you can avoid death if you're able to open up that artery very quickly. And we know that when we open, the quicker we open that artery, the more of the heart we can save. And you only have one heart, and the more of that muscle we save, the better off you'll be. We can open it up with balloon angioplasty, regular stents, or the newer stents. So it's one of the treatments that has been improving over time. We have something called door to balloon that every single major hospital looks at to how quickly we can open up those big closed arteries. And really, within 60 to 90 minutes, those arteries should be opened up. Otherwise, you probably should go somewhere else. But that is the goal for every big major center in the country.
Talking about heart attacks a bit, and you're saying that, so basically what happens is when the artery closes, that's what causes a heart attack.
Yes.
What happens if somebody doesn't get treated for the heart attack?
So if when you have a heart attack, many things can happen. It could be a benign event where you just have some muscle damage and you just need medications going forward. It could be that you can have a cardiac arrest. The heart rhythm can go out of order, and unfortunately, you can have sudden death, which can happen at home if the patient is not seen. But hopefully, the idea is to get patients quickly to the hospital to save from that from happening. And the number of people dying from a massive heart attack in the United States has been significantly declining, which is excellent news over the past 10 years. It has to do, of course, with the medical therapy, but mainly that we mechanically open those arteries so quickly that it really saves people's life. And also, when you open an artery quickly, instead of having a major damage in the heart and you have congestive heart failure forever, you can have a preserved heart, and you generally can function normally going forward if this is successfully and quickly treated.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the difference between a heart attack and a cardiac arrest?
So a cardiac arrest can be caused by multiple things. For example, patients may have a rhythm disorder. The rhythm can go out of order and people may die. You can have some heart abnormality in the valves or the structure of the heart, and that can cause a sudden death episode. A heart attack is one of the things that causes sudden death. So it's one of the things that can cause sudden death. It's the most common one in the United States. So a heart attack would happen, the heart rhythm would be out of order, and the patient may not survive it. But again, the exciting news is over the past 10, 20 years, the number of patients having a cardiac arrest that did not survive because of a heart attack is declining, which is great news. And hopefully with, you know, addition of new and new technology, new treatments, that would be, that whole idea would be a thing of the past.
We've been talking about the Absorb, which is a stent that's really only offered at St. Vincent's here in Northeast Florida anyway, and in the Northeast Florida region, and it's an absorbable stent, talking about heart attacks. And you were just mentioning that if the artery closes all the way, that the that essentially it has to go in there and be opened. Are stents used in emergency situations to open up in a heart attack, or are they used sort of to avoid that from happening in the first place?
Both. So if somebody shows up with some angina, which is chest discomfort because of the heart, a lot of patients have anginal symptoms. I just saw a patient last week in the clinic. She came to see me, and she was having chest discomfort every time she walked. So I put her on the schedule for the next day, and I looked at her heart, and she did have a blockage. It wasn't 100%. She was 70, 80%. And clearly this patient could have had a much worse outcome, but we caught it at that point. We're able to put a stent in there, and we got a great result for that patient. Now, in some patients, they don't present until that artery is closed, or you get what we call a plaque rupture. You can get an injury to that plaque that's formed, and then the way the body heals, it brings these clots on top of it, and that closes off the artery. And we definitely need to take those patients immediately and urgently to open up the artery and put a stent if at all possible. Technically, those patients will also get a stent to reopen that artery. And the reason these stents work really well is they prevent, with the medicated stents, they prevent re-narrowing. So you can open it up. If you just do balloon angioplasty, there's a high risk of it coming back. If you put a stent, it's less chance of it coming back.
Really? That's interesting. Well, we have another half hour on the show to talk about it, and I'm really excited to do so. Phone lines are open. Dr. Garris here in the studio with me, 904-340-1045. You're listening to Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's. A look at your news, weather, and roads with Trish Hobby coming up next. With us here on News 104.5 WOKV for Ask the Doctor. My name's Tim Tompkins. Each and every single Saturday at 2 o'clock, it's a free hour of medical advice. St. Vincent sends in one of their top doctors to answer your health questions. Today I am joined by Dr. Garris, an interventional cardiologist at St. Vincent's. Carlton KB producing the show, keeping us honest, the man behind the boards and the phone calls right now. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. We're talking about issues of the heart. We're talking about the Absorb, which is a really awesome new stent that St. Vincent's is the only hospital in Northeast Florida that offers it to its patients. And off the mic, though, doctor, something I kind of wasn't expecting to talk about on the show, but I'm hoping we can just touch briefly before we go to the phone calls. I see Russell Wayne on the line right there. Is we're talking about nicotine and how that really affects the heart in particular. And so I'm not going to mince my words at all. I was a smoker, and I switched to the e-cigarette because I was told that it was a healthy alternative. And I'm talking to you off the mic right now, and I'm finding out that it's nicotine that is still bad for your heart.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. That's a good opportunity to put away that misconception. It's a huge misconception because e-cigarettes are not healthy, and they have nicotine, and it will cause cancer, and it will cause damage to all your blood vessels, and it will kill you. So if you are smoking e-cigarettes, please stop. However, that being said, it probably is less harmful, slightly less harmful than actual cigarettes because you're not intaking some of the additional components into your lungs. So it may not be as harmful, but it's still a fatal event. So if you're smoking e-cigarettes out there and thinking you're doing great, please work on getting rid of it. It's not good for you.
You say that while I'm sitting here looking at mine. So I'm going to have to take your advice. And we had a caller earlier, I think, that talked to her. Maybe it was a story you were telling Dr. Garris about how it was so hard for him to quit the cigarettes. And it's just smoking's hard. More power to you if you can quit. Let's go ahead and go straight to Russell. Russell, thank you so much for staying on the line. You are on Ask the Doctor.
Yes, sir, doctor. I would like to give you a little background on me. I'm 61 years old. I've never had any cardiac events at all. My father had an MI, myocardial infarction, at the age of 43, and he died at the age of 68 a few years ago. He was the poster child, though, for heart disease. He grew up in the Deep South with all the greasy foods.
All the good food.
He smoked Winston cigarettes, you know, pack, two packs a day, high stress, no exercise. Having said that, and now I have an older brother who's 5 years older than me, 66. He had a heart attack 2 years ago, survived it, has two stents. My question to you is, And my brother was a smoker prior to his heart attack, and like my dad. Now, I have never smoked. I try. You know, I'm on Lipitor. I'm on blood pressure medication. But my wife is concerned about, because of my history, she is encouraging me to get one of these body scans to see if I have any blockage occurring. What do you recommend on something like that?
So, Russell, these are really, really great questions that you're asking, and we do spend a lot of time talking about those. You clearly have a genetic predisposition, meaning that you are more likely to have a heart attack than another person, even if you're doing the exact same thing. So one person can smoke and not have a heart attack till 70. Another person can smoke and have a heart attack at 50. So because your father had such an early MI, you are somebody that is would considered to have positive family history no matter what your father did, because it was so early. Therefore, we do have different targets with people that are at risk. So the cholesterol level for somebody like you, our targets are a little bit lower. We don't follow targets as much anymore, so we basically say we need to treat you with everything we got. So you need the highest dose of medications that we can give you. There are some newer drugs on the market that are injectables that actually treat the cholesterol amazingly so, but we're waiting on some of the data on that. So the difference between you and somebody who's not genetically predisposed is we really have to treat your risk factors. It sounds like you are getting treated very well. So that's the best thing you can do for yourself. With regard to screening, the data on that is not very clear. I get this question all the time, especially if somebody has a friend that died, or, you know, doctors always get worried about, you know, whether they're going to have a heart attack because another doctor had one and so forth. So this is a common issue that we don't have an answer for. But considering such an early age for your father, I think doing what we call maybe a calcium score or CTA of your coronary arteries is not a bad idea. This is not a standard recommendation that we make, so just want to make clear that I'm not recommending this for everyone.
Well, but Doc, I believe, if I could interrupt you, I did have, is that where you say almost like x-ray your chest to look for calcium?
Yes.
I did have that.
Okay.
About 3 or 4 years ago, and it did show some calcification.
All right, so that's all consistent. So now your doctor knows that you have risk factors. You do have a positive calcium score. So you and your doctor need to sit down and really aggressively treat all your risk factors. You need to be on the highest dose of statins. You need to be on aspirin. You need to exercise. Your blood pressure treated with the proper medication. Consideration should be made for adding the new cholesterol drugs. And so that's all we can do. We can't make it go away, but we need to treat the risk factors that put you there.
Now, I'm on 80 milligrams of generic Lipitor, which I think is a pretty high dose.
That's the most ideal dose. So that's perfect. What is your LDL, by the way?
My LDL has been elevated, but my HDL has also been very good.
So, you know, depending what your LDL is, you might have what we call familial hypercholesterolemia. You can discuss with your doctor whether you should be on one of the newer injectable agents. So that's another addition you should consider. Not necessarily definitely, but something to think about and discuss with your physician. But it sounds like they're doing a good job for you at this point.
This can be done through my internist, is that correct?
Yeah, your internist, but they usually have to see a cardiologist more comfortable prescribing the newer meds.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Appreciate that phone call, Russell. Again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. I want to make sure we get to everybody. Kicking it over to Betty in St. Augustine. Betty, you are live on Ask the Doctor. What's on your mind?
Hi, Betty.
Hey, Betty, putting you back on hold. Carlton's going to check in with you, and we'll get to you as soon as we get done talking to Viviana. Viviana in downtown Jacksonville, you're live on Ask the Doctor.
Hello.
Hi, Viviana.
I have been diagnosed with bundle branch blockage on both sides of my heart. What does that mean?
So that's not part of what we're talking about today. This is part of the electrical system. So the heart muscles are basically electrical cells. The electrical cells travel, make the heart pump. I know that sounds a little bit too much, but the electrical system in the heart is like the wiring in your house. And the wiring in your heart is just moving a little bit slow. The signal is moving a little bit slow. Most of the time, that is of no consequence. It doesn't cause any damage. So not a big problem to worry about. Your doctors will keep an eye on it. On a rare occasion, somebody may end up needing a pacemaker. But most of the time, this is just an incidental finding. As we get older or have more birthdays, really is the way I like to put it, the electrical system just moves a little bit slower, but nothing to be concerned about too much as long as your doctor is aware of it.
Yeah, I'm 81.
Okay, well, that's great.
One of my doctor friends, an elderly gentleman, I asked him, I said, what is a BBB? And he said, a bundle branch blockage. I said, what does that mean? He said, oh, it just means it's the electronic wiring that the good Lord put into your heart is starting to wear out.
Well, I don't know about wear out. Just to slow down a little bit. That's all.
I said, how nice.
So thank you very much for that phone call.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, let's go over to John. John on the south side. You had questions about how to determine general chest pains?
Yes. Good afternoon. I just was just curious about, I'm actually going to try to visit the doctor this week. I work a very physical job, and how do you really know how to tell if it's maybe a muscle skeletal issue,
right,
if it could be a lung, a chest? Like, it's just, it can be kind of scary. And, like, how do you really know?
How old are you, John?
What it could be. 43.
Okay. So the risk factors, we have to take that in consideration. So when somebody is, for example, diabetic and they're 70 and they have a lot of risk factors and they have some chest discomfort, our urgency level is a little bit higher, than somebody who's healthy, who's active, and he's 43. So in general, and it's always hard to put these in specific terms, but in general, heart pain or angina occurs when you exert yourself, and it gets a little bit better when you slow down. So when you exert yourself, you feel it, and it can slow down. It gets a little better when you relax and rest. That's generally what heart pain is, but people can have all kinds of different things, especially women can have a little bit different sensations. For somebody like you, if you're active and you're not having chest discomfort when you really exert yourself, then that's generally not a huge problem. But your doctor will be able to do an EKG on you and then decide with you whether a stress test would be a useful thing or whether your doctor is comfortable from the history telling you that it's not too concerning. But it, I wouldn't ignore it until you feel a little bit better about what's causing it.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah, I just kind of know sometimes if I tend to like move my shoulders forward or kind of like flex forward, I tend to feel it there, like in the chest area and kind of maybe like the middle of my back. It's hard to explain, like a deeper.
So that's a good sign. That's consistent with musculoskeletal pain. So your heart, you can't move your arms to make your heart hurt. It just as a general rule, that's not how it works. So that's reassuring what you just described to me.
Okay. So, well, thank you for your answer and your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.
And phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. You are listening to Ask the Doctor on News 104.5 WOKV. Dr. Garris here in the studio with me, an interventional cardiologist at St. Vincent's. Dr. Garris, I want to touch on a couple points from a couple of the callers a minute ago, and I guess I'll kick it off with what Russell was saying. And he was talking about essentially a change in lifestyle that he needed to have to really deal with this coronary artery disease. And you were talking about diet, and one of the diets that I've seen floated around has been the Mediterranean diet. Have you heard much about that?
It's my favorite recommendation. I usually stay away from recommending diets, different diets to patients because, Medicare has different reimbursements for diets. And sometimes there's all these ads in everywhere, and then I have to deal with Dr. Oz's recommendations, diets, and so forth. But overall, the Mediterranean diet is my personal preference for a heart-healthy diet, and there's a lot of data suggestive of that diet. So it's a kind of a low-fat diet with more healthy proteins, fish, turkey, chicken, and staying away from the heavy fats, staying away from the heavy carbohydrates. tends to be the one that has the best data of protection from a cardiovascular standpoint.
And how does red meat factor into heart health?
So red meat is fine. Red meat is perfectly fine. People get into trouble when they eat a lot of fatty red meat on a very regular basis. So if you're going to eat red meat 2 to 3 times a week, probably reasonable, but try to get the, you know, a healthier red meat with not a lot of fat and cook it in a healthy way, you know, limiting the amount of butter and the fat that goes with it. It's the red meat itself is fine as long as it's not overdone and it's not very fatty.
This might be too specific of a question, but is for people that perhaps they're trying to limit their red meat, you know, and they order pizza and they're like, I think I'm going to get my pizza with cheese and pineapple instead of cheese and pepperoni. Do little decisions like that really make much of a difference?
Yeah, it's not helpful at all because you've just said pizza. So in of itself, you've already beat the purpose of a healthy diet.
So there. I might so as well just throw on the pepperoni?
You might as well eat a lot of pepperoni on there. Okay. Go for it.
All right. And then the next caller, I want to talk about something that he mentioned really quick. I see the phone lines are lighting up, and we'll get to those in just a moment. Actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and go straight to Deborah. Deborah, on the north side, you are live on Ask the Doctor.
Yes, I have a question for high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I've been having really high blood pressure for years now, and my medical doctor can't seem to get it under control. I was wondering if, you know, a cardiologist could help me more. Should I, you know, go and see one cardiologist?
Yeah, Deborah, that's
help me.
Yeah, that's a good question. Also, yeah, a lot of the time the general doctors can take care of that. Sometimes some of the general cardiologists can help you with that. Sometimes the kidney doctors are the ones that treat the very bad blood pressure because some of the blood pressure comes from kidney issues. So, yeah, if you've had trouble for years, I think going to a specialist, either a kidney doctor or a general cardiologist to help you with that. There are some excellent medications for blood pressure right now that can be used. One of the caveats is sometimes in the newer medicines that work better tend to be not generic and a little bit expensive. So that's the only downside. But most of the time, we can find with blood pressure treatments, generic, not so expensive medication that can do a good job. So seeing a kidney doctor or general cardiologist, likely not a bad idea.
Well, what would they do? I mean, if I go to a kidney doctor, how would they know if my kidneys that causing my blood pressure?
So they'll check a few things. I don't want to get exactly on the workup of things they would check. There's a few things to check that may be causing that blood pressure, and also the combination of which medicines to use together sometimes makes a difference. So it's not just adding medicine. Sometimes different combinations of medications work a little bit better. So getting an opinion would be a reasonable thing to do, Deborah, and I'm sure they'll be able to get it under control for you.
Hey, Deborah, thank you so very much for that phone call. We have to take a break right now. We have one segment left. Riley, I see, is waiting on hold there, and as soon as we get back, Dr. Garris will get to your question. Stay with us. Thank you for sticking with us here on Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's each and every single Saturday at 2. I am joined by Dr. Garris today, an interventional cardiologist at St. Vincent's Cardiology, St. Vincent's Healthcare. If you are interested, and we've been talking a lot about the absorbed stent, and if you think this might be a good option for you, you can go ahead and call his office. That is 388-1820. Again, that's 388-1820, the St. Vincent's Riverside and Southside location. We're going to talk a little bit more about the absorb in just a minute, but Riley, I really want to make sure that we get to your phone call. You are live on Ask the Doctor.
Hi, Riley. How are you today?
Good.
Very nice. So my father, who is 49, for a couple years now has been having a lot of problems with very high blood pressure. He's being treated for with amazing doctors, and seeing everything that's happening to my father, I'm very curious what sort of things and habits can I pick up or drop that can help my blood pressure in the long term, knowing that I might be predisposed to having problems with very high blood pressure.
Yeah, that's great, Riley. How old are you?
21.
That's fantastic. So we occasionally see younger patients who start to develop some blood pressure. In general, since you are likely to develop what we call essential hypertension, you'll get high blood pressure at some point in your life. The best things you can do is maintain, the salt is kind of questionable. So just not no salt or anything, but watch out a little bit for your salt intake and maintain a weight level where your BMI is in the, sometimes if you're muscular, that's a, you know, tough thing to say, but make sure your weight is under good control, maintaining a healthy BMI, and doing some aerobic exercise 3 to 4 times a week. And if you do those things, and of course, don't pick up nicotine, for goodness sake. If you do these things, then you're going to do just fine. You may end up being on a blood pressure pill in the future, but that's nothing to be terribly concerned about. They have very little side effects to newer drugs, so you're going to be fine if you end up needing that. But do those first things first.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Appreciate that phone call. We've been talking about the Absorb. Who's a really good candidate for the Absorb? It's a stent that essentially absorbs into the body instead of leaving the metal inside the artery.
Yes, we are very excited about the new Absorb trial, the new Absorb stent. After our trials have finally successfully showed benefit, we are happy and to be able to bring that to Northeast Florida, as we try to do, always bring the best technology in St. Vincent for cardiovascular disease. The Absorb stent is a reasonable option for all patients, but we can't tell that unless we see the angiogram. After you have a heart cath and it's determined that you need a stent, then anatomically is where we can tell somebody may benefit from having an Absorb stent or not. But overall, every patient should be a candidate for that new stent, but it's not for everyone. We can tell by looking at the angiogram. So if you think that that's something that you might benefit from, you can discuss it with your doctor. We're happy to see you, to offer you the new technology. And especially patients that may have some, we have some patients that have metal allergies that can't even get stents. We have a couple of those patients, and we can certainly treat them with the new absorbable stent, because that stent is not metal. It's made of a sugar kind of material that dissolves, as we said, in a couple of years. Every patient we're happy to consider for it, but it's not for everyone.
And so somebody wanted to go see you to talk about, see if they're a good candidate, they would call 388-1820?
Yeah, we're happy to see patients if they think that's an option for them that they want to consider. Discuss it with your regular cardiologist, and we're happy to give you an opinion if needed.
All right, Dr. Garris, it's been really nice to have you back on the show. I have 3 takeaways that I've taken from this, and the first takeaway is the Absorb stent is a really good option for a lot of people. Number 2 is e-cigs are not as safe as people like to make it out that they are, and nicotine's really bad for your heart. And 3 is to get on the Mediterranean diet.
That is fantastic.
Well, thank you so very much. You'll
thank
have to come back on the
me.
Show again.
Right.
We got so many good calls. Every time you're on, we just get tons of calls.
Thank you very much for having me.
Look at your news, weather, and roads with Trish Hobby coming up next.